when we went on a trek. We did a 10-day trek, and so these are gone. Where have they gone? So the mountains, this is the Annapurna Range above Pokhara, and yeah, awesome to be able to get up in the morning in the dark with a torch and then see the sunrise with the mountains behind it. So it really beautiful country, much easier to live in than Kolkata, where you'd have to go 10 hours or more to find a hill. In Nepal, it's 20 minutes outside of the valley. So next picture, please. So this is just generally what Kathmandu looks like. So it's a mixture of it's mainly Hindu, some Buddhist, but also lots of ordinary buildings. That's actually our rooftop, and it's not come out very well with the lighting, but in the distance there you can see mountains behind the hills. And that makes everyone smile in Kathmandu when you see the mountains. You only see them a few days a year because of pollution. Is it on a automatic, Susanna? Oh, sorry. You're fighting the screen. Didn't realize that. Okay, so yeah, so my role, I'm the War Map Act and the dependent. So in Nepal, I'm on a dependent visa. For work, you have to have a master's degree to be doing most work there or be doing research, which is what Fryn's doing. So we'll get the pictures back and I'll carry on. Can we go forward a couple? Can we go forward two? Yeah, one more? Excellent. Okay, so in Kolkata, I was really busy. I was in charge of all of the buildings and maintenance and stuff. And I went from a really busy job to arriving in Kathmandu at the end of COVID. We caught COVID. Church was still online, so it was a few months before we actually got to connect with people in Kathmandu. And the project that I'd come out to start on, we should have already started, but didn't start for another 8 months. So it's kind of, what am I here for? What am I doing? What's your plan, God? So I had a bit of an identity crisis, on a practical level at least, is I didn't actually have anything to do. I mean, Fryn had her research, and I just for 2 or 3 months hardly had anything to do. And then next slide, please, Susanna. But obviously, I realised that my identity is in Christ, not in the practical work. But even so, it's kind of, what am I actually doing here? And again, another. And I feel that my time to date has very much been God teaching me to be patient and to wait on Him. I'm a natural planner. I like to know what's happening next year and the year after that. And God's been revealing a couple of months at a time, which really messes with my head. But it's been good. And again, another one. So we started off, I started off renovating Purna's existing factories. So they're building a new factory, but they're renting two buildings, and one of them was an old people's home, and it had lots of partition walls, and they wanted them all cleared out so that they could actually have an open space for production. You have the next slide, sir. So I actually cleared three floors and polyfilled the holes and so on, but they didn't want me to do a really good job because landlords were a bit unscrupulous there. And the last building that they renovated and did a really good job, they said, "Thanks very much. I know you had a 10-year lease, but you can go. And if you don't like it, you can take us to court, but you'll probably be waiting 10 years to get it to court." So they left and started again, which is one of the main motivators as to why they want their own building, so they've got control. And the next one. So I spent a couple of months ripping out walls and carrying them down 3 or 4 floors and filling holes. And this was their shop outlet on the ground floor. I even did a little bit very poor signage. That's their logo. And the next slide. And then again, so this space is in the paddy fields, currently about 2 miles south of the Kathmandu Lalitpur conurbation. Probably in 5 years' time, it will be built up all around there. So I've got myself a motorbike, learnt to ride, which is all good fun over there. And it takes me half an hour to get out to the site, and it's going to be horrendous when I get back because the lanes are downhill and it's muddy and it's monsoon. And it will go down. So this is the site. I mean, click on a couple more slides slowly. And it started looking a bit like an archaeological site. So digging out the foundations. They've got to put extra precautions in for the earthquakes. And again, I was learning all about serious reinforced concrete and footings. And again, and the last one, next one. Oh, yeah, we've got some steel pillars going in. In Nepal, they don't tend to work as efficiently as you would hope they would in the West. So it's a steel structure, but we would have hoped that they would actually create the steel frames in the factory, bring them to site and bolt them in. But they actually bring steel to site, weld it on site, say, oh, it's a little bit twisted. Well, we correct that. And build it on site. So quality control's not as good as you would hope. Safety's down here somewhere. So we're saying, I think it'd be a really good idea if you wear shoes rather than flip-flops. And maybe a harness while you're welding on the first floor, balance, squat on one of these beams, welding. And the next picture, please. So that's where it was when I left it a few weeks ago. It's going to be, this current phase is going to be 2.5 floors, and eventually it'll be 4 floors, and we'll be able to hold 500 employees. They currently have just over 200 employees. And the next picture. So I'm not a civil engineer. I've got electrical background and project management experience and a bit of health and safety and stuff. So my role, I'm not in charge of the site. I'm, they decided to call me a company representative. And Sabin there is the Nepali civil engineer who's the project manager. So my role is kind of to just support him and mentor him and encourage him to make good decisions, or to make decisions and to make them this week, not next year. It's Nepali, it's very laid back. It's very laid back. So I'm encouraging him to make decisions, but he's a really good guy and we've had some really good conversations. He really enjoys our coffee time. And he used to work with Samaritan's Purse and other Christian organizations, and but he doesn't know much about Christianity. And so, Samaritan's Purse. Have you heard the story of the Good Samaritan? And he hadn't. So you tell him the story. So we have some good conversations. So that's the main role I'm doing, which only started in September, October last year, and should finish by Christmas. We think it'll probably be summer next year, 22, because they think they're going to do the next floor, the contractor, quicker than they did the first floor. And they haven't allowed for monsoon, and they're pouring concrete. It's water and concrete doesn't go together very well. So we'll see how that goes. And the next slide, Susanna. So God's all this time is telling me to be patient. That's a part-time job. It's not full-time at the moment. So I needed other things to be doing as well. And again. So I've got involved in various things. I'm just pushing doors, really, and some of them open, some of them don't. So I've been teaching English at Nepal Theological College, which is really interesting because I didn't know how much I didn't know about English grammar. I don't think I was ever taught the rules. So I've been spending 2 days preparing for a lesson, one day doing the lessons, and then one day marking, and then repeat. So I did 2 terms of that. I've finished that now, but that was quite interesting. So I know what an adverb is and all sorts now. I've joined KISC, which is the International School, as a trustee. They wanted someone who wasn't a parent or a teacher, so they kind of were impartial, and also with health and safety experience, because while Nepal's safety is down here, they get inspected by British schools overseas. So their level is HSE UK standard, and they weren't achieving it. So I've been helping and kind of mentoring the operations director there a bit, which I quite enjoy working with. And then I've done some electrical consultancy work with 514, the cafe. They're building a new building, and also Your Place Furniture. If you see my last slide, next slide, Susanna. That's it. So that's a workshop where they employ staff, Christian staff, and they're making really good furniture out of steel and woodwork, but they were welding and doing carpentry in the same tin shed on very, very poor electrical cables, and everything was melting. So they built a second shed, so they've now got welding in one and woodwork in another, and I've designed a new electrical system, which we haven't put in yet, because I frightened the last electrician they brought in. He wanted to work Nepali rules. So we're going to do that in August, hopefully, and make the installation a lot better. So that's kind of what I've been doing. You're looking at me strange. Come up here. Come on. So it's very much, I don't know what the future holds, but I'm getting to learn that God will provide in time, in enough time, and not necessarily in my timing. Thank you.
Namaste. Tupai haru sanchai hunahuncha. That is how you say, how are you, in Nepali. And I've stolen Dave's fleece, so like I'm showing off now. Malai tiso boyo. Coldness has happened to me. So yes. So as Dave said, we were 5 years in Kolkata, and that was, if you're visiting and don't know anything about us, so that was predominantly working with women who've been trafficked into red light area in Kolkata from Bangladesh, Nepal, and India. And then we shifted over to Nepal. So my work still involves working with these women who've been trafficked into India, but predominantly the Nepali women. So if you want to go to the first one. So I'm actually going to start with I finally got back to Kolkata. So if you remember, last time I was here, we stood here feeling it was pretty tough because we had a big transition. We were going to stop being in Kolkata and shift to Nepal, and that was really, really hard. And I just wanted to thank you. We want to thank you for sort of journeying with us through that, whilst it felt really bad, because you could have kind of gone, that's too tough, you know, bye, you know, but you stood by us and thank you, just huge thank you. So I finally made it back, and it was very healing time. I think I was still holding on to some hurt and loss and grief and things. And then the picture there with the lady in the yellow jacket, I walked into the red light area again, and this lady who's from Bangladesh called Baby, she saw me and she rushed over and just snuggled in like that. And it was just like, oh, you know, like the relationships are real. And that's probably the most important thing that we can do with our lives and with our faith, is have genuine relationships with people. That speaks more than anything. So I got to catch up little Palak in the top middle there, the little girl. She's still going to school. She's doing okay. One of the other ladies has had a baby. So I got to, the baby screaming, I'm laughing. But you know, this is a woman who decided she would never love again in her life. She treated so badly, and then she accidentally got pregnant, but she absolutely adores that baby. She is capable of loving again. It was lovely to see. And those are some of the Nepali ladies who are still in Kolkata, down in the bottom right. So we're still super connected with these ladies as well, in the work I'm doing now. So I just want to start with, got to go back to Kolkata, and it was amazing and very healing. Okay. So over to the next one, which is, so the visa I'm on, is a research visa. And my research title is The Viability of Voluntary Repatriation for Nepali Women Who Have Been Trafficked into India for Commercial Sexual Exploitation. And then the second part, do the services and things like that are available in Nepal actually meet their needs and priorities? So a lot of anti-trafficking work seems to be based on assumption as to what people find difficult, what do they need, what do they want, what is most important. So the research is to stop basing stuff on assumptions. So we've we're in partnering with Anu, who's the Nepali lady I worked with in Kolkata. We've been interviewing women who are still in red light areas in India, and I've been interviewing people in Nepal. And the questions mostly focus on what is difficult. Well, the first two questions are, if you were free to choose, would you want to stop doing sex work? And then if you were free, if you want to stop, would you want to come back to Nepal? So it's kind of, you know, just the fundamental, what do you actually want? and then it goes on to what is difficult? What is making it difficult for you to make that decision if you want to leave? And then what are the things that you hope for and dream for if you come back? And what of those things are the most important? And then the questions in Nepal are very similar to that. What do you think these women need, want? What do you think is difficult? What are you doing to address these difficulties? And then also finding out what they're doing. How accessible is it for these women? And I guess the key thing about the research is shifting it from seeing women as just broken victims. They have been, they are classically trafficked into India. Most of them are underage, tricked, sold, you know, held against their will. But the longer they are there, this is their life, this is their reality. They have had to learn, they've learned to live here. They have a life here. They have friendships. They have children that they're raising. They have families that they're supporting. So it's shifting it to seeing them as adult women who are capable of making decisions, and they are capable of making decisions, and sort of giving them some respect and autonomy in the decisions going forward in their life. So, and it's going really well. I had to translate all the interviews for, you know, ethical considerations. They're all in Nepali as well, so that for me in Nepal, I can say, do you prefer English or Nepali? Obviously, I need help with the Nepali. So so that was an epic job. And I've been analyzing the Kolkata data. So this is like three projects in one, I feel. There's the Kolkata data that's coming in, there's the Nepal data, and then it's comparing the two. So what's, you know, interesting from the what the ladies are saying, Kolkata, what's coming out is there's three things that I'm seeing is around resilience. There's hugely high levels of resilience in these women, which I'm wondering whether it's coming from their childhood experiences before they become trafficked. So they're ending up in red light areas, incredibly tough. And that resilience is making it like they survive and they can do amazing things in their future, but it also makes it quite difficult for them to leave because they're so good at coping. So it's like, how can you address that? Or the levels of confidence that they have and how that relates to their age and access to opportunities and things. So you can see there's a sort of window of opportunity where women can choose to come out. If they're too young, they're not free. But if you leave it too long, they give up. They lose hope. They think this is it. So it's kind of when you look at the services in Nepal, it's like, what are we doing for the older women here? You know, there's sorry? I'm about to knock the communion off the table. so it's really highlighting areas. You know, what are we doing for older women who want to come out of trafficking situations? They're not all 20 or 30. They don't all want to go to school. They don't, you know, what are we doing for them? So there's a lot of people interested in the results, which is exciting, and hoping to do sort of a small presentation in October with the people who've been interviewed plus other interested people, and hopefully it can shift what is happening with this group of women to really respect who they are and to address their real needs rather than what we think they need. So doing that, okay, and then moving on. So there's the research side of it, which is really important, but there's actual real women who are coming back to Nepal and in this kind of approach. So not being rescued and put into housing. It comes out in their interviews that some have been rescued before and put into housing. And it's almost like the housing replicates a brothel. So they're not allowed outside and they get their mobile phones taken away. Sometimes they even have to make products for foreign sale and don't get any money. That's like, oh, yeah. So these are women coming back voluntarily and choosing how that looks for them. So these are the real women. And a lot of them I know from Kolkata. So I just wanted to share like a few of their stories, you know, just what's going on there. So if you move on. So that's Sony on the bottom left there. And I guess I just want to give an idea of how one woman is more than one woman. So that's part of the research as well. If you just try and look at helping a woman as an individual, Nepal is a very community-based culture. So she's not thinking about herself. She is thinking about her entire family. So if we try and do stuff to help her, it's never going to work because she's trying to help everybody else. So you need to embrace her whole social structure when you're working with her. So with Sony, who's come back, she was only working in Kolkata because her mum needed chemotherapy and they couldn't afford it. So she was working to pay for that. But sadly, her mother passed away during COVID. And now she gets, that's her with her dad on the bottom right. And sometimes when I feel sad, like being away, I saw my dad since I've been back. And it's like, oh, are you guys still okay with me being away? And I showed him this picture. And I was like, well, you know, like, hold on to that because this dad got his girl back. You know, because you guys are helping us to be out there, this dad gets his little girl back. And that's her whole family who we've met. That's her village where they're from, and they all came into Kathmandu. So Dave and I get invited to all the family events now, and we get invited to the village, which is like, there's no other foreigners going in there. It's a Buddhist, you know, village, but we're part of the family now. And so when we can't talk about spiritual stuff that goes on in, like in newsletters, what's going on in Nepal, because Nepal it's not a safe country to be open about faith. But the reality is we're invited into this Buddhist village and they know what we believe and there's an impact. Sony's going to church, in Nepali church. Most of the girls are going, women, sorry, are going to Nepali churches now and stuff. So one woman, you get invited into a whole village. So it's exciting. So moving on, I think it's Bindu. She's so cute. she's like, Dave, when I always like, Dave, don't have an identity crisis because look at the way she's looking at him. Like, Dave can communicate to these ladies what a safe adult male can be like. And it's really important. Now, Bindu was 13 when her older sister sold her. And for me, it's been quite amazing because I have vivid image of her standing in a brothel in India. And probably my biggest image of her was coming back to Kathmandu wearing a fluorescent tracksuit and learning to ride a bicycle around the streets, just like smiling and being happy. You know, this girl who's had no childhood. So, but also her family in the top right. So they're very poor and they live in part of Kathmandu. This is just another sister and some of the other members of the family. But you get invited into that family as well. So moving on. So these are just some of the others. So Jamuna on the right-hand side there, she has come back from Delhi, and she has been able to get custody back of her little boy, who is about 9 years old, Sandeep, and he had his first ever birthday party when he came to be back with his mum. He'd never celebrated his birthday in his life. So you've got mums and sons and sort of reconnecting. Sanchamaya, she is from Giamfedi, which is a really key trafficking village. And keep in your prayers, that man there, he's a big trafficker from trafficking Nepali women into Kolkata and all over India. And he got convicted for trafficking and then got released when the political party changed. But he's just been rearrested and back in. So if you, like, he controls that entire village and there's no women between 13 and 35 in that village because he's trafficked them all. So, like, keep that in your prayers. He needs to stay in jail. So moving on. So there's this other group of women who are not living in the transitional housing at all. They wanted to come back and they want to stay independently in other parts of Kathmandu. So I just wanted to give you an idea of like what is happening with this voluntary repatriation. It's really working, and they're having lives in different parts, but we organized a social group for them so that they can connect with each other. And we're going to be starting to do that for women coming back from one of the other red light areas as well, because there's slightly different dynamics. And then moving on from that, so you'll see Sony is in, she's just moved into her own house, so she is like moving into independence. But so Sony's, she has two best friends who are still in Kolkata. So Sika on the right, I'm really bad at that. On the right hand side, she came to visit for the first time in about, since she'd been trafficked, she came to visit at the end of last year. So Sony's starting to have an impact on other women in India. So she's thinking about her options. Her other best friend is Swastika. Now that is a very normal name in Nepal, okay? And Swastika got in touch with us and said that her sister Dolma, so the little arrow going across there, the mask here, she's like, my sister is working in a red light area in Pune, which is near Mumbai. She'd really like to come back. Could you help her? And so we were able to connect with her, and she's doing barista training now. And her best friend is Pooja, who's part of the group. So Pooja's come back independently from Kolkata. She's living in North Kathmandu, and they're best friends. So Pooja's now doing barista training as well. So moving on. Then you have Rahul in the middle at the top and his mom, Rupa. So Rupa has been working in Kolkata, you know, since she was 18, for the last 35 years, and raised Rahul in the red light area. Now he's come back. Now his mum's looking to come back. She's been visiting, but Rahul's moved back. He is now doing 6 months discipleship training in Pokhara with YWAM. And he is like, for the first time in his life, he is hanging out with this. He sent me this picture. He's hanging out with like kids his own age from Nepal. And he's figuring out like, who am I as a Nepali? And who am I outside of a red light area? Who, you know, like he's figuring all that out. And then we had a lady who came back a couple of years ago who's got a Santa hat on there, Selma. And she's from a different red light area in Kolkata. And one of her friends has just come back, Nima. Nima's in her late 50s. And she has been in India for 40 years, you know. And like, she'd given up. And now she's back. And so we're figuring out, like, how does this work? So through the research, I've met an organization that will help older ladies who don't have any other income and things like that. So they're helping her. And she's got a little cleaning job and things. So we're... It's just, this is the reality. And I guess with these, I just wanted to try and give an idea of how interconnected this all is. So if you go on to the next one, so what we're seeing now is because the women in Kolkata have been able to get to know us, and they really appreciate being treated as adults, and respected, and freedom to make bad decisions, and like all of us can do, you know, you can make mistakes. So, they're coming back, but they're referring their friends who live in Delhi and Mumbai and Pune. And so those women are starting to come back. So when now the impact, if I'd stayed in Kolkata, I think the impact would be more just Kolkata, Nepal. Whereas now you're seeing like, okay, this is going across India. This is where the Nepali situation is. And then instead of them just coming back into one small house in Kathmandu, they're going all over Kathmandu and they're staying in their villages and things like that. So it's quite a big project. So just there's one more picture. So this is Rabina, who is the amazing Nepali Christian lady who I've been mentoring in casework, really, which I think is quite, we do casework in the UK, It's, you have social workers and you have case management stuff. It's not really something that happens in Nepal, and certainly not been happening with trafficking work. So she is help. She will be alongside women when they come back. She's actually forming relationships with them before they come back. So she's been over to Kolkata and visited and got to meet ladies there. Really hoping that we'll be able to go over to Delhi and Mumbai and strengthen some of those relationships as well. And then they come back and she works alongside them. What do you want to do? What's difficult? How can we do this? What about this option? What about this? And it's a long-term relationship. This is not just going to end in 6 months. This is, they need good people by their side. They need Nepali good people by their side who are going to stick with them for the duration. She's brilliant. She's already over full-time. So looking at ways into her having some another person working alongside her, having discussions with her about, you know, should we register this? Like, is this best as a not-for-profit business, or is it good for as an NGO? Or, you know, how it's, and it needs to be owned by the Nepalis. So it's brilliant. She's absolutely brilliant. And I wanted to share, I asked her permission for this. When I've interviewed Nepalis, I really don't like the fact that so many of them ask them a question and they say, well, if I'm answering for myself, this is what I say. But I have these foreign funders who want this and say this, and they're really trapped. So everything I do is about empowering the Nepalis to just be awesome at what they're doing and just adding into that and helping that. So she's been praying and praying and praying about this work, and God has given her this verse. From Isaiah, about enlarge the place of your tent, stretch it out, do not hold back. And I feel that that really fits in with what we're seeing with these women. They are referring each other from throughout India, and they are staying throughout Nepal, and there's young men coming back who've been affected by this, and it's big and complicated and exciting and beautiful, and you can see God's freedom in so many lives and ways. So I would please invite you to also be praying for over that verse and over what is happening out there, is into how can this be, how can we develop this so that God's kingdom work can really effectively spread through the Nepali community in India, and as they come back. And all of these women are becoming like Christian church leaders, people who can go into other villages. And it's very, very exciting. And these women are getting a chance at free new lives. And you guys are all part of that. So thank you. I hope it really gives you a snapshot of what is happening and how exciting that is. But yeah, I would ask you to keep praying over that verse in particular, about what does that big tent look like? How does it stretch? And how does that become like a really good tent? Yeah, so thank you.
Well, I thought it was interesting is seeing the photos, seeing the real people and seeing the connections. These are real people that we are looking to help, and others looking to help through your work. And these are real people that Jesus also died for, which is what we'll be remembering shortly. He died for each one of us. He died for each one of those people that we saw on the screen. So it's great to hear their stories, and it's great to see the connections.